the last word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.
Dion Fanning is with us again, co-host of the Free State podcast. And Dion, it's very rare that we do a sporting obituary on The Last Word. But it did strike me that Kevin Keegan is worth talking about. Okay, maybe it's because of the generation that I am, having grown up watching football in the 1970s and onwards from that. But Keegan was, I think, a really significant figure, very much as a player and also a bit as a manager as well, who deserves a little bit of talking about. And also something, Dion, which I don't think has been commented upon in all of the coverage over the last week as well, was somebody very much of an Irish heritage. I think his grandfather was from the west of Ireland, who ended up down the coal mines in Yorkshire. And that's where Kevin Keegan emerged from, as very much a hero of England in the late 20th century. How aware of him were you growing up?
I was aware of him. Obviously, I was very aware of him. And he, when I was getting interested in football, he was playing in Hamburg and he was the European Footballer of the Year. And I remember that European Cup final where Hamburg were strong favourites to beat Nottingham Forest, and Forest won their second European Cup. And obviously, as an England player. But I think the other thing about Kevin Keegan at that stage, Matt, and this is like why he was so significant, is that footballers weren't footballers the way they are today then, but Kevin Keegan was. Kevin Keegan had that. Everybody knew who Kevin Keegan was. He was he sort of transcended sporting codes. In Ireland, people would know who he was. And I remember as a kid going to see Shamrock Rovers play Southampton, and Keegan had come back from Germany and joined Southampton, which was a strange move for a player who was European Footballer of the Year. He was said to be on £3,000 a week, I think, at Southampton. And they were a very attacking team, but they played at Shamrock Rovers at Lansdowne Road. And I remember, I don't remember anything about the match, but I remember a bunch of us, I don't know who I was with, but we just invaded the pitch at the end of the game.
You hooligan, you.
Yeah. And we all headed for Kevin Keegan. And everyone was running for Kevin Keegan. And my only memory is of Kevin Keegan rushing by me to the dressing room in that Southampton, you remember that early 80s Southampton, yes, jersey with the thick red stripe down the middle. And, you know, and that was the aura that Keegan had at that point. And then he went to Newcastle. And I think his grandfather had actually been, he was a Geordie, you know. He'd grown up in Doncaster, but he had been a Geordie. And he had this pull with Newcastle, and he ignited them as a player. And it was all very Keegan-like. He was never shy of his own self-worth, you know. And he left Newcastle and he flew out. He flew, you know, a helicopter landed on the centre circle and he flew away. And it was like a few people could kind of get away with that. And even at the time, I think, there were probably people who felt he was a little bit showbiz. But what he actually had really was a sense of his own worth. And even in football in those days, you were used to being told still that this is what you're worth. And you belong to a club or you belong to whoever. And Keegan didn't do that. He moved around. You know, he left Liverpool after 6 years. He said that was as much as, you know, even though he loved Liverpool, he needed a new challenge. He went to Germany, he went to Southampton, and then he finished at Newcastle. So that awareness of him as a player was very strong. And then
Before we get to him as a manager, though, as a player, I think it would be fair to say that he sort of had a David Beckham type thing about him to an extent, in the way that Beckham left Manchester United for Real Madrid, saw the value of marketing himself. Keegan would have been known for things like the bubble perm hairstyle that he had, quite
the
ridiculous looking.
With Henry Cooper.
Yeah, it was in a TV show, The Superstars, where he endeared himself, I think, to the English public by crashing his bike, been badly injured, but getting up and going on to win the event. He sang on Top of the Pops, a song called Head Over Heels, one of the first crossover from football into music. he was a big cultural figure beyond sport in the 1970s and 80s.
No, he was. And he had that power, as I said. And this is important. Like, this was a time, you know, the 80s, you know, and we were, you know, it was, you know, later in the 80s, but it was, you know, that, you know, football was described in the Sunday Times as a slum game played by, played in slum stadiums. Like, it was seen as, and I can remember as a football fan, like, you know, being in, like, if you got into conversation with certain sort of people, especially in English people who were maybe, who, you know, if you express an interest in football, they looked upon you like you were, some people, like as if you were kind of, you know, what's wrong with you? Why are you engaging with this game that is played, you know, that is full of hooligans and all that kind of stuff? And Keegan transcended that completely. And he did Superstars, he did the ads. I think because he wasn't tribal in that sense, because he had identified himself, if you like, and he identified his own brand in that very Beckham way, he wasn't aligned with any of the worst excesses of English football as it was seen at the time. So he was able to remove himself from that, and he also had removed himself from the game by, you know, going to Europe, going to Hamburg, and then returning to a club like Southampton, where, you know, it was a nice, respectable place to be, if you like. So he definitely carved out his own niche in that regard.
Yeah, and as a footballer, to win the European Player of the Year twice, when he wasn't the most skillful of player, but he was, I suppose, dynamic, he was competitive, he used to get goals, but also probably didn't have the luck with England, because England didn't qualify for the 74 and 78 World Cups. And in 82, when they got to Spain, he was injured, really. And he played, himself and Trevor Brooking were injured, and they only played a peripheral role, coming on as subs, I think, in the last game before England went out.
Yeah, well, that's right. Now, at the same time, you could, like, it is amazing he got the European Football of the Year award. You could argue that his prominence in England is because at that time there was a sort of, Liverpool was the strongest club, Nottingham Forest. A lot of them were based around, like, Liverpool had a Scottish spine, you know, Nottingham Forest had John Robertson, players like that. So the English players in that period, they were in a bit of a lull, and Keegan was the most prominent of them. And in 82, as you say, he came on for the final game against Spain, and England, it was a nil-all draw, and England went out in the kind of second group stage, as it was, and he hadn't played a minute before that. So it was a tough time. But again, that in a way, his brand wasn't touched by that failure, because the failure was so abstract, if you like. He didn't play in 82. There was no, they didn't even qualify in 78. Like 82, the notable games were, like, they lost to Norway in the qualifiers. I think they lose to Hungary as well, possibly. So, you know, he wasn't associated with that. He was associated with Kevin Keegan, super, like, many people would have known him as from Superstars,
yeah,
as they would have known him from football.
Okay, I mentioned, of course, that he was the sort of forerunner for David Beckham. I'm sure there are people say that before you had Kevin Keegan, you had George Best, that, you know, British football always has superstars, and it has people looking for the extra few quid and doing things outside of football. And I understand that. And of course, I'm sure those people will remember as well the famous 1974 Charity Shield, when he took a box from Johnny Giles, which Argentinian in style almost, that Leeds Liverpool game was. And then Keegan and Bremner started thumping heads off each other and got sent off and tore off their jerseys, and it caused scandal at the time. But let's move on to him as a manager, because I think an awful lot of people would love to have seen him win the league with Newcastle. And of course, they had a 12-point gap at one stage over Manchester United in 1996. It all went wrong. And then after a game at Leeds, we had this post-match interview in Sky Sports.
When you do that with footballers, like he said about Leeds, and when you do things like that about a man like Stuart Pearce, I've kept really quiet, but I'll tell you something. He went down in my estimation when he said that. We have not resorted to that, but I'll tell you, you can tell him now if you're watching it, we're still fighting for this title, and he's got to go to Middlesbrough and get something. And I'll tell you, honestly, I will love it if we beat them. Love it.
Okay, just explain the circumstances of that, Dion, because afterwards, Manchester United players said that was the moment that they knew they were going to win the title.
Well, the thing about that is I think the title was already won. Like that was so late in the, that was at the end of April.
But Newcastle and Manchester United had to play Leeds. And that was after the Leeds game that Newcastle had played. And I think Ferguson had tried to put it up to the Leeds players, will you try?
Well, he had said after the Leeds, like he said after Leeds played Manchester United, he was, he looked, and he was talking about the performance that night, and he was talking about how they'd raised their game.
Yeah.
And, you know, in a classic bit of Ferguson, psychology, he said that, you know, he didn't expect that, Leeds would play as well. Would they be as fired up when they played Newcastle? And then he also pointed out that Stuart Pearce, Nottingham Forest, had agreed to play, or Newcastle had agreed to play a testimonial for Stuart Pearce, who played for Nottingham Forest at the time, at the end of the season. And, you know, I think, you know, implying that, you know, a testimonial against the league champions would be far more lucrative than against the team that came second. And Keegan bit on it, but by that stage, like the Keegan was very self-deprecating about this. In when he talked about this is the stuff people remember me for, but the title had slipped away. The title had slipped away. United were extraordinary in that. I think they took 40 points from their final 15 games. They were just it was incredible. Turned into the home straight, and I was at the Liverpool Newcastle game, the 4-3, which was at the beginning of April, the famous game, and with Sam Collymore scoring the winning goal, and Keegan slumped in his dugout, with his head over the advertising hoarding in front of him, and that was the beginning of April, and that was when people felt it was done. So at the end of that month, it had fully unraveled. But I think everything about Keegan was kind of encapsulated in those two images in some ways, especially as a manager, because he, many managers would sit there looking like trying not to betray any emotion when a winning goal went in against them. But Keegan just collapsed. And then he had that rant, which wasn't what was expected from a manager. And he wasn't conventional as a manager. And it's funny, Matt, you say, people would have loved him to win the league that season, which they would have because the team was thrilling. But to me, it actually sums up something that, more and more I think is important about sport is that people don't care ultimately. They remember that Newcastle team. They remember how it made them feel. It would have been fantastic if they won the league, but they were fantastic anyway because they created a certain feeling around football. They created that feeling when you went to watch that Liverpool Newcastle game. I've been watching football a long time, and that's still in the top three games I've ever been at. And that was because Asprilla was playing that night. Liverpool were open. It was an incredible match. And Keegan shaped that, and he did that, and ultimately, it just does that. I think that matters more than whether they'd actually held on to win the league or not.
Well, just to finish out, he also had a spell as England manager, which didn't go well, and he famously quit in the toilets in Wembley after a defeat by Germany knocked them out of the World Cup, wasn't it?
It was. Yeah, it was the last. I think it was the last game at the old Wembley.
And again, does he deserve to be remembered for that, really?
No, he doesn't. And again, he was like England at that stage.
So it was for the Euros. Like, it wasn't for the World Cup. It was for the Euros.
Oh, no, he's knocked out of the Euros and then he quit after the game at Wembley in the qualifiers for the World Cup. They got knocked out in the group stage at the Euros. But again, Keegan came in, and this was, and English football still suffers from this problem. He was a response to the manager who had gone before. Glenn Hoddle had resigned as England manager because, as the late George Byrne put it, he was the only manager ever to resign because of his views on the transmigration of souls. He was seen as somebody who didn't motivate the players. The players found him odd and didn't get on with him. They said, what we need is a motivator. Get us a motivator. And they picked Keegan. And Keegan could do that, but I don't think international football suited him. And he wasn't an analyst. He wasn't somebody who could identify problems. He said, you know, he knew what was wrong with the England team, but he didn't know how to fix it. And his enthusiasm is the thing that he was brought in for. And that was the thing that he brought into management. And that's what he harnessed at Newcastle. And it's funny, there's one little story I remember. And when we were at the 2010 World Cup, and to me it was a very small little thing, but it always summed up Kevin Keegan. And my colleague Keith Duggan in the Irish Times wrote about it at the time. We were in Sandton Square in Johannesburg one night, and it was kind of the center of attraction for every fan at the World Cup, and people were milling around, and there were a lot of Mexican fans there that night, and they were singing. And somebody saw Kevin Keegan in the square, and he was entranced by this and transfixed by this singing. And he just said with great enthusiasm, I don't know why this always stuck with me, but he just said, the Mexicans are having a sing-off. And there was something about it. Kevin Keegan, this icon of the game, just standing there at the World Cup, just bewitched by these Mexican fans that are having a sing-off, he said. And he was just full of enthusiasm for everything.
Okay, well, he made the most of his life. And unfortunately, at the age of 75, he died of cancer last weekend. Dion Fanning, co-host of the Free State podcast, thank you as ever for being with us here.
The Last Word with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.